Good evening. Welcome to the HIV Hour.
Good evening.
How are you, David?
I'm good, thank you. Josh, how are you?
Not too bad. We got a cold, actually. There's a lot around, so we've had to rearrange things, haven't we, for this week. So we're on Zoom now.
We have a little bit, so yeah, we're not in the studio because you're contagious.
But yes, sounds like a song. Yeah. But yeah, I'm Josh Sharples, and I got David Frey with me today. So yeah, we're going to do a show, and we've got a great show actually, haven't we, David?
We have indeed. We've got a great interview which we did yesterday, and that's with Anne Marie Watmore. We'll tell you more about her later, and we've got some details of our little trip to Eastbourne.
Yeah, that's a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it? Because that was very interesting going to, it's like we were outreaching, weren't we, with the HIV Hour?
We were. It was lovely. We were meeting our audience in the field, so to speak.
Yeah.
They weren't in the field, you know what I mean. They were in a community hall.
But it was good to, just good to meet people and be in them, because, you know.
What? So we should probably say, you know, this was Lunch Positive's Eastbourne social group, which is the first Saturday of every month. If you're interested, just check up the Lunch Positive website for that. But they also do them in Eastbourne, Hastings, and also Sea Haven, which is sort of Seaford New Haven.
I think we forget sometimes, don't we? Because we are very lucky in the Brighton and Hove area that we've got all this support and different charities. But if you go outside of the catchment, then it's hard to get connections and support, and so it's really good that Gary from Lunch Positive is doing that and reaching out for
and the whole team. Yeah, exactly. And I believe that they're hoping to do one in Worthing soon as well, so going into West Sussex, because obviously, you know, West Sussex is more rural than East Sussex, so I think that the opportunity to meet other people living with HIV is less than in sort of the larger cities and towns. So well done to Gary and his team, and thank you for the invite. And we had a nice time, didn't we?
It was good.
20 people there. It was a lovely, nice sunny day. I felt very welcome there, and I met people that I'd never met before there as well, which was nice. So, you know, obviously people that the Brighton group doesn't serve so much.
And it's just good, as you say, it's good to talk about the show, because a lot of people, like, still don't know about the show, and we really want to get that out. So so we're a support, and we're people can contact us as well and use us as a bit of a support network, can't we? So it was good.
In fact, we've had some good responses from hearing from our audience, don't we?
Yes.
And we have a website, www.hivhour.org.uk, and you can email us at info@hivhour.org.uk. And we've had a lovely email about last episode, didn't we? Someone had really enjoyed the bit that Stephen Hart did about Pedro Zamora, the Cuban activist. So,
oh, yeah, it was a very good episode.
Later. It was. Yeah.
Well, I've just been up to a wedding. I could have had a couple of weddings. I think that's why I'm not well, because I picked up a bug. But I was listening to a couple of the previous shows, and they're just so informative and really good. And you don't have to be HIV to listen either, which I think is always a...
No.
It's just very informative, and just listening to people's stories and what is going to be so good. So, we'll check them out. Shall we have our first song? We're going to play the recording you did with Gary at Lunch Positive, and then we're going to have a request from Sharon, who requested a song. So should we go for that, David?
Yeah, lovely. Yes, it was nice to meet Sharon and Gary there. So let's hear the little snippet you did.
Yes.
Here we are, and it's the first Saturday of the month, and that means that it's Lunch Positive's Eastbourne Group, and I'm joined here with Gary, who's CEO of Lunch Positive, and one of the service users, Sharon. Hello to you both.
Hello, David.
Hi, David.
And we've just had a lovely lunch, actually. I had some lovely salmon and a nice rice pudding, which is one of my favourite puddings. Anyway, Gary, why is Lunch Positive doing something today?
Well, at Lunch Positive, we're really keen to provide community spaces for living with HIV in the towns across Sussex, and Eastbourne, Hastings, and many others are places where, until we came to provide these regular lunches and peer support gatherings, nothing else was happening. So here once a month to bring people together and give people a space that is our own, where we can be HIV, you know, at ease with one another and all the challenges that we have in our lives.
Yeah, I mean, it's really important that we, you know, especially in some of the smaller towns and villages that are not served, you know, so well with infrastructure, that you know, we're able to meet other people living with HIV. So, Sharon, why do you come here?
I come here because it's very positive for me and my mental health. I also get to meet other people that are in similar situations. The company and the food is very good. I think if you have HIV, you should get yourself down to one of the centres and enjoy the lovely dinners that are made by the staff.
Yes, and volunteers as well. So how do people find out when and where the venue is, Gary?
Firstly, can I just say thank you, Sharon, for saying all those lovely, wonderful things about us. Thank you so much. Well, I mean, all of the work that we do at Lunch Positive is on our website. So just search for lunchpositive.org. And it'll give information on all the work we carry out in towns across Sussex. And if anybody wants to get in touch, they could email us at hello@lunchpositive.org.
Right, that's quite easy. So that's hello@lunchpositive.org. And these happen once a month, is it?
Once a month here in Eastbourne, once a month in Hastings, once a month in Seaford, and soon to start other areas in Sussex.
Yeah, I heard, is Worthing in the pipeline?
Worthing has just started this month, and that's going to be a monthly gathering for the foreseeable. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that'll grow and reach people who live in that area of Sussex.
Mm-hmm. And Sharon, how often do you meet other people living with HIV?
I come every month to Eastbourne, and I also go to Hastings.
Right.
And it also gives me peace of mind knowing there's other people I can talk to.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be about HIV that you're talking to them, does it?
I come here and we talk about all sorts of things.
We
even have massages, hand massages.
Yes, I know. So I'm going to have a hand massage later, and you have different visitors come each month, do you, Gary? Like health and professionals.
Absolutely. I mean, our projects in East Sussex, I should say, are managed by our worker Jim, and he makes sure that there are visitors from other organisations, people that can help with benefits advice, fuel advice, hand massage, as we say, and kind of other wellbeing activities. So yeah, we use the space to make it a place for community.
That's great, and great signpost to other organisations as well, isn't it? So I had somebody from CGL, Change Grow Live, was here today as well. And as listeners may be aware, that we love having people write to us and email us. You can email us at info@hivhour.org.uk, and we love people hearing their song suggestions. And Sharon, you've got a song request for us, don't we? So we're going to be playing that next. So could you introduce the next song for us, please?
The Gambler, for my son Daniel that died.
So that's The Gambler by Johnny Cash.
Yes.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the HIV Hour. It's on 97.2 FM and RadioReverb.com online. That's just interesting to hear, listen, other people from around the country, really, and different parts of the country, isn't it, David?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Great track as well, The Gambler.
It was, yeah.
So we're going to play the first part of a great interview you did yesterday, David, Anne Watmore, who was a nurse in the 1980s and 90s, wasn't it? Is that right, David?
Yes, she was. Yeah, lovely woman. She was, as you said, she was a nurse in the 80s and sort of witnessed the very start of the HIV and AIDS epidemic. And her response was, it really quite moved me, because I mean, the last episode of the show was about activism. And I just, I automatically think of people living with HIV being activists. But actually, she was a healthcare professional that noticed things happening and took action herself. So let her speak for herself, shall we?
Yeah, she's very informative. I'll just say
How did you meet her?
I went to somebody's birthday and we went playing crazy golf, and then we went to a pub and she was there with her son, and just got talking, and I mentioned I did the show, and she started to tell me about her experiences as an HIV nurse and I just thought, do you know what, you'd be great to come on the show, and she'd be up for it. So that's great to have her on. So this is the first part. We're going to play the second part next episode, so yeah, please keep an eye on that, and see you on the other side.
HIV Hour is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.
So I'm delighted to be joined in the studio by Anne-Marie Watmore. Hello, Anne.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Yes, lovely to see you too. Now, Anne, you've got quite a long history of working with HIV and AIDS people. Tell us, how did it start, your interest?
I think for me it started as a nurse and reading appalling stories coming from America about young men dying and becoming gravely ill with infectious diseases and not being able to understand what it was, what it was happening. And I wanted to learn more. I wanted to be able to teach teams and people with whom I worked that we were nurses, we had control of infection. It was something that seemed to me to be very important, that we gave our patients dignity. Mm. And I just felt at the time that this wasn't happening.
Right.
Some of the stories coming through were quite shocking. People being left alone, people being put in isolation.
Mm. Was this in America or were these stories
It was America that it started, but then there were countries all over the world where people were, I think Cuba was one place where you would go off, you'd be sent somewhere. There was a prison in France where anybody who was convicted of a crime whose white blood count was very low was sent to the particular prison in Montpellier, Marseille. Right. And they weren't treated. They weren't treated at all. They were just sent there. Mm. So I wanted to learn more.
Mm.
And I applied for and attended my first symposium, which was in September of 85, and that was at St. Mary's in Praed Street.
Right.
And that enabled me then to look at what else I could do, how we could set up teaching programs and within hospitals, how we could offer dignity, and also to look at the client group that we were serving.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it had a horrible name then, HIV. I think it was called GRIDS.
Gay-related immune deficiency.
Yeah. Which was a horrible name.
Mm.
And then all the shocking stuff came through the doors, tombstones.
Mm. Yes.
And I had young children.
Mm.
And I found that all quite scary, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was based on fear. It was a fear.
Yes.
Using fear as a motivational tool.
Yeah.
Which some would say is effective, but the legacy of that is the stigma.
Exactly.
That people, you know, experienced then, so much worse, but
yes.
We still there's still echoes
yes.
of it in modern days. So in 1985, that's really early days, isn't it?
It was early days.
Yeah.
But for me, it felt like almost like a mission.
Mm. Mm.
You know, this is happening. We need to find out why.
Mm.
And I did every little bit of research that I could. To the extent that I went on several courses. And then I heard about these four young men that had set up a group in Brighton.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in their homes initially.
Yeah.
And then they expanded a bit and they took a building in Cavendish Street. And I had the opportunity to volunteer. And it was at the time it was just SAC, Sussex AIDS Centre.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they initially had the helpline bit.
Yeah.
I think that came later.
Right.
But it was it was a really great place to learn. I spent two full weekends doing training.
Mm-hmm.
Met lots of like-minded people.
Really, yes.
Who were there for various reasons, some because they were infected, some because they were afraid, some because they felt a duty to the gay scene, and others because they were educators and wanted to learn more and wanted to prevent happening in England what was happening in America, really.
Yeah, yeah. Can you remember any of the names that you recall?
The gentleman that I worked with was Clive Bentley.
Yes, I recognise the name.
Yeah, he went on to London, I think, to do teaching in one of the London hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the person. I also worked with a lovely young man who's still my friend today, Richard, and there were three of us that used to work together of an evening and share information. We were so lucky we had the National AIDS Manual to look
up. That was such a resource, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
It was huge, for listeners that don't know, it's like a huge, almost biblical tome of just about every bit of information that you could...
And constantly changing.
Yeah, constantly.
It was put in with, like, loose leaf, so you could constantly change, you get an upgrade, that old piece of information would come out.
Yeah.
And Sat also, they printed a booklet... I think it was 4 weekly, or it may have been 2 weekly. Mm. So one of my remits with that was to deliver piles of them to a pub in Littlehampton and a club in Littlehampton because they didn't have access. Mm. So I used to go to the pub. They had a room upstairs where I could leave the leaflets, and I would leave condoms and lube and then a Cairo club, and I'd have to knock at the door and a little man would peer out and say, oh, it's you, okay.
Yeah, do you know this is a gay venue? Yeah.
I hope so. And then over to Chichester.
Yeah.
So I used to do this sort of in between working, because I was still working full time, of course.
Mm. So you were a full time nurse at this point?
Yes.
But all your sort of activism was as a volunteer?
As a volunteer.
Wow. Yeah.
I remember I found one really funny Purple Ronnie poem.
Right.
And it really appealed to me. And it was about having good sex. My children were grown up with grandchildren growing up. Mm. So I put this in a frame in my bathroom and a little basket of condoms and lube.
Yeah, yeah.
And my family thought it was quite hilarious.
Yeah.
And I said, yes, but I'm sure that some of them will disappear.
Yeah.
And if I can teach my family, they can go on and teach other people as well.
Exactly, it's sharing that information. Yeah. So I was a volunteer at SASH. I think I started to volunteer in about 94, 95. Oh, I came to Brighton 89, 90. So yeah, I remember I worked for the gay men's outreach team, which was called Wise Guys.
Yeah.
Did you become employed at SATS?
No,
I
stayed a volunteer.
Yeah.
They introduced things like a crash pad, where somebody could come if they were thrown out or if they were desperate. There was this place for people to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
They cooked food, and when people were too ill to come out, they would take the food to them. They did a terrific amount of work informing not just gay men, but informing the local population. Their aim with gay men was protecting them and giving them knowledge to protect themselves, actually. Sexual health has always been a don't talk about it subject. Even among nurses, it's something that you don't approach.
Really?
A lot.
Right.
A lot of people don't approach. Forgetting sometimes that when you do an assessment of a patient, it's as essential to include their sexual well-being as anything else.
Of course, yeah.
So that was another issue to take back.
Mm.
So I went on from there to go on courses, and my trust was amazing. They were starting to set up another course called ACT, AIDS Counselling and Training.
Right.
And nurses, physiotherapists, anybody who wanted to learn more could access this. So that, and I used to bring information back from the National AIDS Manual to there, and so it was a busy time. I then did a short course, an EMB course in London, and that was just care and management of people, and that was in 89. I then went on a workshop, which I must say was amazing. It was in a convent, and it was a 2-week course.
Mm.
You stayed over.
Yeah.
And when we arrived, as each person arrived, you were given a pill, weekly pill pot.
Mm.
And in your pill pot were Smarties.
Yeah.
And you had instructions with it. So it may say you take this pill with a breakfast.
Yeah.
You take this pill with a drink. You can't eat an hour before this pill. You take this pill every 4 hours diligently.
Yeah.
So it enabled us to see how distressing it could be if somebody was at work who had medication, because some of the medications that were coming were so definite at the times they had to be taken. And it opened my eyes, really, how difficult it must be.
Was it almost walking in the footsteps of people who were taking the real life
Absolutely.
Pills, wasn't it? Yeah. What a great way to train people. Really.
It was a really good learning thing. For me, it made me realise, because although you give medication and that, you don't realise somebody's going out doing a job. Suddenly they've got to excuse themselves and go and take a tablet.
Yeah.
Or they have to decline a meal or a cup of tea because they can't have something in their gut. Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember some medication had to be refrigerated as well, the sort of Tolivir liquids.
That's right. Yes.
Have you seen the series It's a Sin?
Yes, of course.
What did you think of that?
I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it. And I went to see Angels in New York.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they did it at The Comedian, and they did it over two weekends because I think it was something like 5 hours. But it was amazing again. And I think it's important as well that these things still exist, because they show today that yes, the illness is treatable, that people are still at risk, and it's not just at risk of HIV, it's at risk of any sexually transmitted illness. So it's about people looking after themselves.
And trying to debunk some of the myths and the stigma around sexual health in general. So, you know, we're all here because of a sexual act. You know, we're all conceived in a certain way or another. You know, why shouldn't we be talking about it and be honest about it? I mean, as a young gay man, I wasn't the only sexual education I had was cross-sectional diagrams of men and women,
of course,
and that was it. But now, I think they're a lot better now with relationships and consent and the other. But yeah, it's so there's been some improvements, haven't there? So many improvements. If you look at what happened in It's a Sin about the poor lad being sort of just stuck in a ward on his own.
Absolutely,
that happened, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Yeah. It did, and I think one of the biggest, almost infuriating articles that I read was about a couple. They'd lived together for 25, 28 years, I can't remember if it's 25 or 28, and the partner died on the ward. And the partner who died, his parents refused his partner access to his funeral. They took the house away because they didn't have it in joint names. And this young man was left completely and utterly bereft of the person he loved, his home. He had nothing.
Just taken away.
And it really, it stunned me that people can do stuff like this.
Yeah. It happened to the main character, didn't it?
Yes.
It's the same. Yeah. No, it did happen.
And I guess in things like that, what happened after it all became really... I know this person. Everybody knew somebody who was infected. Then people started to know somebody who had died. And then it started to change its emphasis a little bit. And it became more, because it wasn't an airborne disease. So how was it being passed? And obviously research identified it was through body fluids. And then it started with people injecting.
Right, so drug users were...
Absolutely. The drug users came into the scene. And then I remember on the line we would get calls from heterosexual men who would say they think that they're infected and they're frightened to go and tell their wives or whatever. And obviously in my head it would be, well, I couldn't say what was in my head. But it would... be about giving advice about where they could go, and there were still private places. I think here we were quite lucky, weren't we? We had the Warren Brown at Shoreham, we had Claude Nichols here, we had a good unit at Chichester, and all three of them offered privacy, dignity, with just numbers instead of names, which was again quite important. So services were starting to change a little bit. Excuse me, and I think that at the time, there was a lot of dissent amongst public, why are the gay men getting all money for their services? But it wasn't, in fact, it was the gay men funding their services.
Yes, yeah.
And people don't realise that.
I've heard it voiced that, you know, why do the, you know, why do we have an AIDS memorial when things like cancer kill so many more people? It's because we got together and we...
Exactly.
We subscribed and yeah. got it done.
And it's important.
Yeah. It's important to us. I mean, so, you know, people want to have a memorial to people who have died of a certain disease, go and get it done. Be the change you want to see in the world. And it's lovely to see that you did that in your volunteer work. Did you come across HIV much in your professional nursing?
I did, purely because I went and did a 2-year course at London Hospital then.
Right. Yeah.
So I was working with people with HIV and AIDS, and I did, at the time I was very, very lucky. I also went to America. I went to Miami, and my brother, he's a professor of science, and he arranged for me to go out with the Miami police. He arranged for me to spend 2 weeks at a state hospital and 2 weeks at a funded private hospital, and I spent a week at a hospice for Puerto Rican people who had HIV and AIDS. Right. That was where I met my first mother and child,
right,
who were infected.
Vertical transmission.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So.
And I suppose that was a lot of street homelessness and drug use.
When I was on the out with the Miami police, their main remit with me at the time was picking up prostitutes,
right,
to see what advice and care was offered and given.
Yeah.
Mm. And to see, really, when we came back, I sat down with Clive and we worked our differences. And looked at drugs.
Mm.
Again, you know, there was this, I was in a program on the private hospital and seeing a gentleman getting really, really well, and his insurance money ran out and he had to leave.
Oh, really?
They there was no compassion.
No continuation of treatment. Because he's already started it.
He was like 2/3 of the way through his treatment.
Oh, goodness.
But he had to be discharged.
Mm.
And it's like, we've got money, you can do anything.
Mm.
But if you don't have money, you know, that's why people die in the streets.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Especially in America.
Yeah.
I mean, at the moment, people are dying in the streets of drug abuse, aren't they? Just killing.
Yeah, there's always a huge problem with fentanyl and other such things, but also globally the reduction of the PEPFAR funding has affected countries internationally, hasn't it? Wow. But more likely to Brighton. You actually went out onto the streets of Brighton yourself.
I did.
As an outreach worker.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. I thought it was very important.
Mm.
I worked with young men who were underage.
Right. So what age was that?
From about 16, I think the youngest young man I met was 14.
Right, really?
Nice. Who were selling themselves for sex.
Yeah, the age of consent at that time would have been 21, wouldn't it?
It was.
The early 80s, yeah.
Absolutely. And it was a little bit scary at times, but I would go sort of like, almost, I guess, because of my age now, as an elderly aunt meeting people.
Yes, yeah.
I used to sit downstairs. The toilet used to be downstairs at Brighton Station. I don't even remember.
I do remember it.
And it was warm.
Yes.
This particular time.
Yeah.
I was meeting three people that day.
Mm.
And one of the young men had been offered a considerable amount of money, but the man wanted him to have sex without a condom.
Really?
And he said to me, I don't know what to say. I said, well, just say, please don't ask me to have sex with you. And he said, I don't know how to do it. I said, do you want me to write it down for you? So I wrote that down to give him.
Yeah.
So that was in my bag.
Yeah.
I was going to work later. So I had my briefcase and everything and a book.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up and met one young man. And at that time, Brighton Station, on the corner where M&S is, it was like a cafe.
Yes, yes.
So that's where I would meet people.
Yeah.
So I'd been into the cafe twice to meet people.
Right.
So I'd come up from the toilet again. I thought, damn, I forgot my book. Went back down, came back up. And as I was crossing the station, I was sort of apprehended by two policemen.
Really?
In not in uniform.
Oh, really? Oh, right, plain clothes, yeah.
And I said, oh. And he said to me, we need to talk with you. And I said, oh, I'm really, really busy. And I could see my young man.
Yeah.
And he said, no, we're saying we need to talk with you now. We have reason to believe you're soliciting.
Really?
And I said, oh, I think you're making an awful mistake, officer. You really are.
Mm.
Anyway, the upshot of it is that I was taken to John Street.
Yeah.
And I was allowed a phone call, so I phoned Clive, asked him to phone work, because I was due on that afternoon, and could he help me, which he duly did.
Yeah.
And this female police officer took this out of my bag, and of course there in writing is, please do not ask me to have sex with you unless you wear a condom. And condoms and lube.
So you were well prepared.
I was well prepared.
Yeah, yeah. And you certainly had reasonable grounds to suspect you were up to something, but nothing nefarious, nothing bad.
So Clive came and explained the situation, and I think when we went out of there, A, I was mortified, but B, we couldn't stop laughing.
I know, you've got to see the funny side of it.
So that was really a bit of a scary... My family, well... They went ballistic. You were arrested for what? You had what in your bag? Oh Lord! Yes, yeah, that was a bit of a scary time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was dark, scary times. But there was a humour sometimes about it. I mean,
yes.
Sometimes it was a gallows humour, but also you're working with some of the most disenfranchised people going, and both in America and over here as well. HIV sort of disproportionately affects people.
And I think that was the lovely thing about Satch.
Mm.
The support there was absent.
Yes.
I think there were only two or three funded places, but the people who were there genuinely cared, and they cared about us on the helpline. They wanted us to have that knowledge. They wanted us to be able to pass that knowledge on. Yeah. And they never gave us things themselves.
Yes, yeah.
And
no judgment as well.
No judgment at all. No.
There was 24 hours, I believe.
I used to do evenings mainly because it was easier for me.
Yeah.
So normally, as I say, with a friend of mine, Richard, and we stayed friends all this time. Mm. Such a lovely young man. So, yes. So, and then I went off and did a 2-year course, as I say.
Mm-hmm.
And this was... for me, it was, I don't know, again, it was very special, but it also brought in educating nursing staff and bringing them up to date with sexual matters and looking at assessments when people come in. And I was taking all this as well back to the psyche service, basically because people with psychiatric problems sometimes have disinhibited behaviour.
Yes.
And for me, my concern was you've got a three, like a triangular care service there. You've got sexual health, you've got physical health, and you've got the mental health and well-being.
Mm.
And didn't want people in their mental health to have a physical tag on them.
Right.
So it was about being able to liaise directly with a person with mental health issues to the clinics, without going through another area and having that on notes.
Keep it confidential.
So it stayed, the confidentiality
bit. It is so important. But strange enough, I mean, I was at the Lawson Unit patient panel meeting the other day, and things have progressed so far that there's a talk about asking patients if they're happy to be identified using their patient, their trust numbers or their NHS numbers.
Wow.
I mean, this is voluntary. You don't have to do it, but
we've
come to the stage now where we've diminished stigma to the extent that some people, like myself, are quite happy to be identified with with other numbers other than my clinic number, because it saves duplication of tests. It allows GPs access to the test results that are done within the sexual health service. But quite rightly, the sexual health part component is protected by law. You can call yourself Mickey Mouse and be treated as Mickey Mouse.
Exactly.
And they don't have to know your real name or where you live.
And that's important for people who want to go.
It is, yes. Because your sexual life is a private life,
isn't it?
It is, yeah. In a way, your mental health is a little bit as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, in your head is your own burden, isn't it?
It is indeed. Yeah. And I do remember that, one specific case where a couple who were inpatients had sex together, and the consultant was very much to both of them, you'll be tested, just like that. Mm. And as nurses, no.
Mm.
You know, these people have rights. You can't just send anybody, especially in those days.
Yes, yeah.
You know, this isn't how it's done. Mm. We need to sit with them both. We need to talk to them. How valuable is that relationship? Mm. Then look at if they want testing. If so, that will be done in a private.
Yeah, they have to give consent. There has to be informed consent. They have to have the information to make...
The woman didn't have the capacity at that time to do that. Mm. So it was up to us and social services to support that person.
Mm. Mm.
So, yeah. So all little issues like that.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Should we take a quick break? Because you've chosen a song, haven't you? So what song have you chosen?
I sort of chose two, and they both are very important. One was Queen...
Mm-hmm.
The Show Must Go On.
Oh, fantastic. Should we play that one?
Yeah, absolutely.
Here we are. Here's the Show Must Go On.
Absolutely.
The Show Must Go On by Queen. Thank you for listening. And you are listening to the HIV Hour on Brighton and Hove 97.2 FM and on DAB Plus Radio. And just don't forget that we're really proud to be sponsored by Jack Russell Technologies.
Yes.
So thank you to Flash and all the team there. Last week I went to the Lawson Unit patient panel. So for the listeners that don't live locally, the Lawson Unit is the HIV clinic for Brighton and Hove.
Yeah.
It serves around 2,500 people, so it's quite a significant clinic. But a large part of their work, or a major part of their work, is research. And some of us are very pleased to take part in research because we learn things about ourselves, and it also helps improve medicine and the standards of living for people living with HIV. So we had the lovely Eileen Nixon come along to the patient panel, and she gave us a short talk about a study which I'd like to tell you about. So this is called the sphere study, as in sphere, as in ball shaped. So it stands for the Psychosocial Intervention for People with HIV Evidence from a Randomized Evaluation. So that sounds a bit of a long title. Basically, what it means is they're going to pair people up with health coaches who will be offered, and patients will be offered up to 8 sessions of health coaching. So obviously there will be a control group, so there will be people that don't receive the health coaching, but for people who are successful in getting the health coaching, they'll have up to 8 sessions where they decide a goal which they want to work towards, or maybe more than one goal. I'm not so sure about that, but certainly, you know, if you wanted to make a change in your lifestyle around diet, or bring your diabetes risk down, or improve your physical health, or improve your mental health, it's free health coaching sessions, and the study is to work out whether it is beneficial to be socially prescribed things like this or not. So the inclusion criteria are quite simple. You have to be HIV positive and attending a specialist HIV clinic. Brighton is not the only clinic, by the way, that is doing this, so if you do live further afield from Brighton, please do check to see if it's happening at a research centre near you. You have to be aged 18 years or over, and you have to be able to give consent to take part. So you will be offered possibly health coaching. Your travel costs will be refunded up to £10 for the travel. And there's no particular risk to getting involved. I think you might get some money towards completing some questionnaires, which will take up a little bit of your time.
Right.
So a little bit of money is sort of offered just to sort of, you know, to compensate you for that, for your time. But really, it's a win-win. You know, if you don't get the health coaching sessions, you may be inclined to want to do that for yourself anyway.
Yeah.
If you are given the health coaching sessions, then you will be given up to 8 sessions for free and work towards goals. So really, I mean, I know Terence Higgins Trust has done campaigns in the past saying how HIV is a catalyst for change. And sometimes, you know, this when we get to sort of these sort of equinox times of years, people often look to make changes in their lives, like, you know, they want to do changes in spring or changes in autumn. So a great opportunity. So to get in touch for the Sphere study, get in touch with your local HIV clinic and they will put you in touch with their research department.
Brilliant. It's so good to have those things come up, isn't it?
It is.
So I've got one, David. Prince Harry joining forces with prominent HIV advocates to issue a stark warning. So there is a video out, isn't there, which we're going to put on our website.
Yeah.
That'll be good to see, but we'll also probably play it next time, actually, just through the audio. But the Duke of Sussex appeared in a new video for UniAIDS alongside Maggie Johnson and Therese Theron. My accent. To urge continued funding to prevent and treat HIV, which can lead to AIDS, obviously, if not treated. The short film was screened at the United Nations Global Gathering in September. It's worth having a look and just looking at it. And
it's a timely reminder. So the video can be seen at the UNAIDS website.
Yeah,
but it's really sort of a bit of a reminder that, you know, that although the 2030 goals are not far away, they are achievable, but we just need that extra push. And it's great that people like Magic Johnson and Prince Harry or the Duke of Sussex and Charlize Theron and other activists are sort of putting their heads above the parapet and saying, look, no, come on, keep at it. We can beat AIDS.
Well, there's lots of, you know, since, you know, with Trump and everything, there's lots of beer cuts that are threatening the crisis, really, and because the funding's been cut. So. Prince Harry said, right now, babies are being born with HIV due to interruptions in antiviral treatment for their mothers, with urgent action to reverse these crippling funding cuts. 6 million more people will become infected with HIV, while 4 million will die from AIDS-related causes within the next 4 years. That's an estimation. It's not just the at-risk communities that will be affected. So it's very important to have these messages across, I think.
Yeah,
and also the Prince Harry established the charity Centreball, which helped children affected by HIV. Is it Centreball? Yeah, but it's just good to have this message across, really, isn't it? A couple leading up to 2030.
Indeed.
So we have a song. So the next song is another recommendation that from Modi. So it was
It's a request. Yeah, from somebody from the Eastbourne group, isn't it?
Yeah. So this is Sailing by Rod Stewart. Thanks, Modi.
So Modi, this is for you.
Yes. Welcome back to the HIV Hour. That was Sailing, Rod Stewart, and that was dedicated to Modi. So I hope you enjoyed that.
Yeah, so a big shout out to all the Eastbourne group.
Yeah,
because actually they're meeting again. So Saturday is the first Saturday in October. So get in touch with Lunch Positive if you are living in the Eastbourne area and want to go to the Eastbourne group. It's on Saturday.
Brilliant. It's worth doing it, isn't it, David?
Nice crowd. Nice welcome.
Yeah. So also there's My Community, which is run by THT. It's 1 year old this week.
Really?
Yeah,
so what is My Community, for those that don't know?
It's a free online space for people living with HIV. So it's a vital service for hundreds of people, allowing them to connect with others, obviously living with HIV. You can ask questions and get support from your peers. The space will always be free for people to use. Sometimes it costs £25 per person each year to run, so it's worth supporting it, I think. If you want to go onto it and want to join, just go to tht.org.uk, My Community, and you can join it.
Yeah.
Worth doing.
I'm just looking at the website now. Yeah, it looks good.
It's just worth doing. It's like just getting that support.
Nothing beats peer experience, does it, in terms of speaking to other people who've been through what we're going through, I've been through, yeah, so we can know. But now when you get newly diagnosed, you forget how daunting it can be. You know,
yeah.
You know, we did it years ago, didn't we? So it's great to be able to speak to people with that lived experience and learn from it.
At least, you know, I think those things never change, really. People's, how they feel about, you know, having HIV and stuff. It's, I think it'll always be similar, won't it? Kind of.
Yeah, exactly. Mm.
Also, there's the launch of the very first Red Ribbon calendar, 2026. So that's going to be launched. So, yeah, the special edition calendar brings together a group of guys united in one cause, raising awareness, fund support for people living with HIV. So Sussex Beacon and Terence Higgins Trust are the two charities making a difference every day. So they're part of this calendar.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to try to get somebody on, aren't we? Jordan Chan, I think, maybe, to come on.
We are hoping to, yes. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he's doing a few things that I think he's doing something at the Sussex Beacon on Saturday, one of the shops.
Oh, one of the charity shops, yes.
Yeah. But also, they're organising calendar sightings and launch parties at Bar Broadway on the 25th of October and at Law in Margate on 29th of November. And there's going to be a launch party in London to be confirmed.
Yeah.
So we'll want to watch out, but we're gonna do a bit more about it on next show. So.
Well, hopefully we can get a chance to speak to one of the calendar participants. Is it Jordan Chan?
Yeah, that'd be good to get him on, actually. So we'll sort that.
Yes.
Also, David, it's coming up to World AIDS Day, isn't it? So we're going to start...
It's getting to that time of year again, isn't it?
No, it just goes quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If you want to get your ribbons, some red ribbons for an event or workplace, you can always go to the THT website again and go on to Red Ribbons for the World AIDS Day page.
Right.
Your bed ribbons.
Yeah, because it really does help. You know, that I remember there was a time when just about every presenter on television sort of wore a red ribbon on World AIDS Day. You don't see it so much these days, but it's about awareness. It's World AIDS Day is about HIV and AIDS awareness. So, if the more people we can have wearing ribbons, the more people go, "Oh, why are they wearing red ribbons?" Because people don't know. I mean, we know.
Yeah.
Some people don't know what Red Ribbon stands for, so be out and proud with wearing them.
I'm always shocked, actually, when you know, we go to an event on the 1st of December, and the amount of people who aren't wearing it really shocks me. But I suppose, as we say, if it doesn't affect you, then...
Yeah, it's, you don't pay attention, do you? But we know that HIV can affect anybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we're coming to the end of our show. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, listeners. We love having you with us. Don't forget, you can always email us at info@hivhour.org.uk.
Yes. And, so we'll be playing the second part of Van's What More's next time. So please tune in then. And you can always listen to our podcasts, which is great. Mm-hmm. So our last song is another request, isn't it, David? So do you want to...
It is from one of our listeners. So this is John from Newcastle. This is for you. This is Respect by Erasure.
Fabulous. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Thank you. Bye.
Goodbye.
HIVR is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.